to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. The country has been traumatized by the armed insurrection at the nation's capital last week, when a violent mob overran police and ransacked the capital, leaving 5 people dead, including a police officer beaten to death by the mob while they were attempting to overturn the results of our presidential election. This is the latest and most extreme experience that has torn at the fabric of our country. Many people feel traumatized by 4 years of Trump as president, starting with the interference of Russia to help Trump in the 2016 election. How do we heal from this trauma? Of course, before healing must be accountability. All involved must be brought to justice. The House voted to impeach Trump yesterday for promoting the lie that the election was rigged, for calling his followers to D.C. and inciting them to riot. The FBI is searching for those involved in the insurrection. But what then? How do we reweave our country back together when views are so different? One man has a proposal. Roger Kluck of the Alternatives to Violence Project works to heal trauma among inmates. They are reducing violence and trauma in many of the most violent environments with the most violent populations. The approach that they developed with prisoners works for people in prisons and is being used more broadly for work in addiction, gang recovery, domestic violence, and sexual assault recovery. So I think Roger Kluck is a good person to turn to at this moment in our country's history. He's a mediator in nonviolence, empathy, and trauma recovery facilitator and trainer. He's got over 15 years working with inmates, gang members, and veterans in prisons and jails with the Alternatives to Violence Project. He's now the director of Projects for Civil Society, a former president of Alternatives Violence Project, USA, and currently the North American representative to the board of Alternatives to Violence Project International. Based on his experience, Roger now has a proposal for a national conciliation project. We're going to hear from him first, and after him, we'll hear from our second guest, Dr. Marty Casey, with another perspective on healing trauma. Roger Kluck, welcome back to All Together Now.
Good to see you.
So I'm excited that there's someone who has some idea of what we could do to help our country heal. I mean, this is a major rending in the social fabric that's been going on for many, many years. So let's start by asking, you know, what do you think has caused the level of hate and contempt that we have in our country now for our fellow Americans?
Well, we've got a lot of outrage merchants, people that promote outrage and anger and disgust. And, you know, today it can be political parties that want you to donate. It can be the news media. So much of our news media now is just clickbait selling outrage. But the political parties are, driving wedges between us, trying to find ways to separate one group from another to bring us, some of us, to their side while othering the opponents. You know, and social media has added on to this, of course, and highlights all of that and frees people up their worst instincts. And now even our adversaries are in the international realm are weaponizing the social media against us.
Yeah. So given all of that, you think healing is possible in America? Why?
Well, I don't think we have a choice, honestly. Martin Luther King wrote a book in 1969 called Chaos or Community. And we got a taste of chaos this week. We have to find a way back from that. The thing is there are literally thousands of peacemakers in this country with tremendous expertise, wisdom, experience, academic experts. Over the last 30 years, the field of peacemaking has become, it's just mushroomed. We've learned from places like Rwanda, Kosovo, Bosnia, Cambodia, you name it, Guatemala, South Africa, all of these societies that were so divided. And most of them, we've learned after the bloody conflicts, and they have had to step back from the abyss and try to heal as a country. And some of that work has been quite amazing. I mean, while Rwanda has its political issues now, they did a wonderful job of bringing the Hutu and Tutsis back together in community. Kosovo, Bosnia, Guatemala you can just go on. Colombia has reached a peace agreement after 30 years. And so there is this tremendous wealth of expertise on how to do this. And since September, I've been reaching out to a lot of the peacemakers I know, saying we need to come together. We got to get the politicians to listen. We have the opportunity, we did, to bring this expertise to bear before things blow up. And while the incident at the Capitol is ugly, and significant, I would say, you know, it doesn't compare at all to the full bloody scale war and genocide and things that we've seen in other countries. We have the opportunity to step back from the abyss before instead of after.
Or at least before it gets too far down a track. I mean, those guys who showed up, some of them who showed up at the Capitol came with guns and were ready to kill members of Congress. So that's
absolutely
just shocking. And we're not Rwanda. I mean, nothing against Rwanda, but this is the United States of America.
No, I'm just speaking on scale. We lost five people. They lost 900,000. We have a chance to stop this soon.
Before it gets any further.
Yeah.
I think that's a noble ambition. And I'd love to see that happen. Obviously, there's a lot of challenges to doing it, but let's first, I want our listeners to hear, you've got a well-thought-out plan for what to do. You've got this Healing America Conciliation Project. So talk a little bit about, so our listeners know, what is your plan? What would that conciliation project involve?
Well, to be accurate, I don't want to say I have a plan. I have thoughts and ideas. I've got a proposed plan. But the bottom line for me is calling peacemakers, politicians, NGOs, civic groups into coalition to fight this, to make it a priority. And that's one of the things we've learned from these other countries is what makes them successful at healing and bringing people back into one community is it's got to be a national priority. The country has to decide it's important enough, and it has to have nationwide implementation. But that said, that's the top part, but the implementation has to be at the grassroots. People from the community have to be running these processes so that it's community-led, community-fed. We don't want, some expert from DC dropping into some community in some small community and saying this is what you got to do. But that's, I see a coalition building. Let me back up. We have less than 3,200 counties in America. When I first thought of this, I was thinking, oh gosh, we got 330 million people, the country is immense, we can never really do this. But then I realized that we have less than 3,200 counties, and we have thousands of peacemakers. The National Association for Community Mediators has something like 400 mediation centers across the country. AVP that I work with has about 5,000 facilitators across the country. David Brooks has the Weavers. There's a new organization, relatively new, the Better Angels, doing a lot of work. There are thousands of these. There are lots of these little groups doing things in small localities. Listen First, Karuna. Anyway, but we can't do this by isolated little groups trying to grow. We need some nationwide implementation. Part of what I'm thinking is if these trained facilitators can be training people such as AmeriCorps Vista volunteers. AmeriCorps and Vista are in every county across America. I'm almost certain of that. We could be training young people in those programs. I would love to see civic groups like Rotary, the League of Women Voters, the Urban League, NAACP, put effort behind this and become training centers and partners also. The Justice Department has a little known entity that came out of the civil rights era called the Community Relations Service. Mm-hmm. And they send it's a very small office, but they are networked with the community mediation centers across the country. And so, for example, when there were the horrible events in St. Louis, mediators from the Community Relations Service went out to foster community discussion and dialogue. So anyway, I believe it's achievable if people step up and the parties step up and we do this. We have thousands of people out there. We need some coalition building to work on issues like best practices and what to sort through what works and what doesn't. I've seen scores of programs where people try to bring people together from across the divide and they want to talk about issues right away. And then they're surprised when it blows up and it doesn't work. And they say it can't be done. One of the things I've learned in my work with AVP, and I've done this in Guatemala and El Salvador, I have friends that helped start the trauma healing in Rwanda, Rwandans and Kenyans. But one of the things they do is bring people together first just to know each other as people. We do community building exercises where they get to know each other, understand what they have in common, appreciate each other's differences. And I'll say I do this in prison. It seems a little weird to talk about, you know, my prison experience having relevance to this healing the many divides that we have.
No, I think it's very relevant. It's part of why I wanted you to talk about this, because you have worked with some of these white nationalists and traumatized people who then traumatize people. So because exactly. of your experience with Alternatives to Violence Project, I think you're one of the best people to be leading this initiative.
So yeah, in a typical prison workshop, I will frequently have three or four or five white supremacists. I'll have Black gang members, Bloods and Crips. I'll have Latino gang members, Norteños, Sereños, Mexican Mafia, you name it. And we'll get 20 guys in a room and we'll stay there for 3 days. And we just get them sitting together. And a lot of what we do, honestly, it's a little strange, but we play a few childhood games every hour or two. We break up, and because there's a lot of tension in the air from sometimes from the, you know, what's going on when they first get together, but also as we go on further and they start sharing and they're making themselves vulnerable and doing deep personal work, you got to break that up too. But you know, one of the funniest things you'll ever see is we play a game like musical chairs with these guys, and it has several different features. One is they come in together, and of course they form in cliques. They sit together in what they call their cars. So they're sitting with their gang members, and then we play musical chairs and make them run all around the room. And suddenly the white supremacist is sitting with a Blood member on one side and a Crip on the other.
Wow.
And to get there, he's had to run and compete with somebody to get the chair, and they start falling down and laughing, and, you know, they're giggling. We make them kids again. But anyway, that's just to go back to the main theme.
I think that is the main theme. It's helping people see others as people.
Exactly. And then that's what we do. We start introducing them to talking about things they do in their life, what they're proud of, what they're good at. And we keep moving them around and sharing with each other. And a lot of this hatred is maintained by the fact that they never encounter somebody who from that other group in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And just a quick story. We did a workshop in a jail, and we were 2 hours into it. And these two guys came up to me, this big black guy, like 6'4", and this white guy, 5'6" and 4 foot shoulders. He looked like Wolverine, mutton chops, all beefed up. And they said, whatever else happens, it's already been worth it. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, we've been gearing up to fight for 3 weeks, and it's just been getting tenser and tenser, and all the guys in the jail are pushing us to fight. And one of them said, and of course, when it started, it's not just going to be he and me. It's going to be his friends, you know, his black friends, my white friends. He was talking a riot was going to start. And they said they'd done a few of these exercises together already. And the one guy looks and he goes, but I like this guy. And that was the end of it, that quickly. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't mean to imply that it's always that easy or that simple. But I know over a score of former white supremacists. I know hundreds of former gang members. And it's all the same. I mean, you know, if you're in a white gang or a black gang, it's all about the other gangs and so forth, the othering that happens. And in fact, that's an important concept in all of this to me, is we have this othering, and that infects our political language. It's, you know, we label them, we set them apart from us, and that brings in hate and contempt and outrage and disgust. And then the violence just follows that. And, you know, we see that in our political class, who use this othering language all the time. In fact, that's a side issue. But one of the things I think we need to do also to counter this is come up with an honor code or a speech code for politicians to pledge to, that they will talk about issues and not people, that they will avoid othering language and inflammatory language and intimidation, that kind of thing. There's a wonderful project out on Whidbey Island here in Washington that they call, Civility First. You can find them at civilityfirst.org. And they did that with their local politicians. They made them all sign a pledge on how they were going to be civil, when they stopped a lot of this othering language and people get down to focusing on issues. Many, many years ago, I attended a training with Ken Cloak. He's a famous mediator. And it was fascinating. The topic was terrorism and mediation, which just sounded mind-boggling. So I went, and it was during an election year, and somebody asked him what he thought about the debate. And he said, debates are absolute, from a mediator's perspective, debates are absolutely the worst thing for a society. He said, you've got two people up there trying to drive wedges between you and get you to dislike the other side and hate the other side. And the entire process is about driving wedges. He said, if a mediator were to run the meeting, you'd bring everybody in and you'd say, what do we all agree on? What are the things that are important to us? What are the issues that bother us? And lump them together and then start working on solutions together. But we've become so expert at driving the wedges that we've forgotten how to do the conciliation work after.
Right. And we've got, you know, the social media platforms have just been flooded with all the divisions, you know, some of it by the people here, some of it by the Republican Party, some of it by the Russians.
Well, and we're all guilty. I mean, despite all my good intentions and things, I slip and take sniping Facebook posts to my personal friends. It's very hard. It's so endemic in our society.
Right. And there's not that countervailing experience that you're talking about to help bring people more together. So I think you may be on to something here. And I personally think it's great, you know, this Alternatives Violence Project, you talked in detail when you were on this show just about 2 years ago. And for the listeners who may not have heard that, to know this project was largely designed by the prisoners themselves to figure out how they could, you know, heal trauma and get along. And I think given the level of hostility between Democrats and Republicans, or really, you know, between the anti-Trumpers and the pro-Trumpers, the Biden versus Trump, whatever way you want to slice it, there's intense hostility. Each one sees the other one as the death of America. And, you know, as a Democrat, I think I'm right. I mean, our people aren't going into the Capitol ready to shoot up the legislators and overturn a fair election. But that's my view. But that's part of my concern here is, like, I believe that the Democrats are based in facts and reality, and that the people who stormed the Capitol and a lot of the pro-Trumpers are reacting to being fed lies and propaganda, and they're not based on fact. It's fantasy. So it's not like before when there was liberal versus conservative and there was sort of an agreed set of facts that you would have different perspectives on and you could argue about that. This is like completely different. There's fact-based people and then there's people living in a fantasy land. How does that factor into your thoughts for having facilitation done at a county level?
Well, I come back to this notion that we have to come together as people first. I'd like nothing better than to put 20 people in a room and not have them identify what party they're with or what they believe. No political paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. And just do the community building, getting to know each other thing. There's a fantastic movie out there that I want to recommend to people, and it's called Divided We Fall, Unity Without Tragedy. And it is a project that was done in this way, brought people together. They actually identified by party early, but they did wonderful things like meeting over breakfast, and they went to a farm and pulled away from everything. But it's a wonderful thing that you see when people get to know each other. And there's some of what comes out of that for me too, is we, in this othering process, we think that if they believe this, they believe all the rest of this comes with it. And people are, of course, more nuanced than that. And so, you know, it's a film well worth seeing, because some of the people from one party or the other are saying, well, you know, people think that because I'm this or that, I might have to believe that too. And, you know, on this issue, I really kind of agree with them a little bit more. And the movie ends with they split the groups up and they ask them to come up with solutions for common problems. And they actually split them up by party, but they've been talking to each other for days. They split them up by party and say, what are the main problems facing the country and what should we do about them? And the lists that come out are 90% congruent. After they've talked to each other and understand each other, agreement was much more possible.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a fascinating proposal, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for you and the work you've done with the Alternatives to Violence Project and the success you've had with prisoners. I mean, getting Blood and Crips and the white supremacists and the black leader, get everybody together and getting along and recognizing their common humanity. I think it's kind of what we have to do. It's at that level now, community by community. So what would be the next step? Do you want to do a pilot project where you select some communities to start a do a pilot and try it out and see if you can develop like a curriculum and a program that would work with American communities?
Well, there are a lot of pilots that have been running for years. I'm honestly, I come back to this, that it has to be established as a national priority with nationwide implementation. So, you know, I would love nothing better than to be chatting with the Biden transition team, for example. He's saying all sorts of wonderful things about unity and coming together. And in the last week, I'm hearing a lot of the Republicans making noises about unity. And if they really want to believe it and are willing to do it, we need to see them help set up some infrastructure to do that and recruit the philanthropic sector and the government sector and the civic sector to start bringing people together to do this. The pilots are there, and yes, part of the answer to your question is yes. I'm starting a pilot too, because I'm fearful that the national focus isn't coming fast enough, and we still have to do something. And in the meantime, we work things out on how to do it. There's one thing I would like to say about this work too is. You know, with the othering and with the violence, we are appalled by people on whichever side we are. There's some group that appalls us with their use of violence. And there's a natural urge to want to exclude them from society. And we do have to reduce. One of my main goals on this is what they call countering violent extremism. We have to get rid of the extremists, but we can't, you know, you can't kill them all. That's their solution. You have to find a way to convert and marginalize them. And so the middle has to grow out. But conversion is the thing that fascinates me personally, because I've seen it so much in prison and in community. And the thing that we find is you don't convert people by lecturing to them. You don't convert people by saying, read this book, or, you know, you don't just persuade them by power of logic. There's a quote in the Buddhist tradition, Dhammapada, that said, hatred never ceases through hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient eternal law. And as I say, I've been fascinated with conversions. And when I look and see, it's always somebody who's extended kindness and compassion that converts them. There's a wonderful book out there called Rising Out of Hatred, about a young man, Derek Black. His father was the founder of Stormfront, which is the premier neo-Nazi website. And he was at a university hiding his identity. And when people outed him, there was, as you'd expect, people saying he should be expelled. The school shouldn't associate themselves with this. And a Jewish group house invited him to Shabbat dinner. And he started going. And he went every week. He went every week. And you know what? They didn't talk white supremacy. They didn't talk race relations. They didn't talk the Holocaust. They just had him over every week and said, this is who we are. Who are you? And he through this extended kindness, he converted. And before the book's over, he's got a Jewish girlfriend who's helping that conversion.
That's great. Well, I just talked to my daughter. I asked her, what do you think we should do about this whole situation? As you know, we live here in D.C. with the storming capital. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I think we should educate those people. You know, they need to go to some re-education camp or something to relearn how to be nice people. So, so I think you've got a version of it. We just have 30 seconds to close, but if someone from the Biden transition team or administration listening right now, just in like 10 seconds, what should they do?
Okay, we have an email. I have an email, info@projectsforcivilsociety.org. That's plural, projects, plural, forcivilsociety.org. No spaces. There's also a Facebook page if people are interested. On the Facebook page, search for Chaos or Community, and we kind of post encouraging stories on bridging the divide.
Great. So, Roger, if you can email those to me, I'm going to post that
absolutely
on the PRN will. Website so people can see it right there. And sadly, that's all the time we have right now, but really appreciate what you're doing and love to help you. I hope people do pay attention and we do something like this. So, Roger Cluck, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Eleanor. Always a pleasure. Bye.
Listeners, stay tuned for our next guest.